Welcome to this week's Investors Chronicle Personal Finance Podcast. I'm Lenora Walters, and joining me today is Bradley Gerard, news editor at Investors Chronicle, and special guest Danny Cox, chartered financial planner at Hargreaves Lansdown. Following the UK's vote to leave the European Union 2 weeks ago, we've seen plenty of movements in markets and currencies, and the chaos seems to be spreading. Over the course of this week, no less than six commercial property funds have suspended investor withdrawals because they don't have enough cash to meet the deluge of requests to take money out. Investors have been rushing for the door because of the high levels of uncertainty over UK commercial property since the UK voted to leave the European Union. Danny, first of all, for our listeners who aren't familiar with the inner workings of property funds which invest in buildings, why can it be so difficult for them to give people back their money?
Well, in an open-ended fund, what happens is when the money comes into the fund, the fund manager buys properties with it. There's some transaction costs that are pretty expensive, and they leave a certain amount of cash as a sort of a free float to help pay for redemptions. But if you can imagine, when you've got lots of people who are trying to get their money out, once that cash expires or once that cash gets close to expiring, they're left with just commercial properties. So selling a commercial property, you know, is a long and expensive process. So what the funds are doing at the moment is they're looking ahead and they're seeing that the rate at which they're losing, they're paying out redemptions in the form of cash has gone up rapidly. They're looking ahead and saying, well, actually, it looks as though we're going to have to sell something at some point. And so by suspending the funds, what they're doing is they're giving themselves some more time to look at how they improve the cash flow in the fund and perhaps sell properties to do that, but also they're making sure that they're protecting investors' interests, which is a really important aspect.
Okay. Now, why are people piling out of commercial property? Is it just because of a vote for Brexit, or are there other reasons to be worried about the prospects for this asset?
Well, the UK economy was turning downward slightly anyway ahead of the EU referendum, and the EU referendum has brought this cloak of political and economic uncertainty. And what we've seen in the past, particularly going back to sort of 2008 and the financial crisis, is that when we have a slowdown in the economy, we very much have a slowdown in the commercial property market. And what happened then is investors were bitten. There were redemptions. There were huge losses. I think the average loss on the IPD index, commercial property index, was around about 35%. And so I think investors remembered that and thought, well, now must be the time for us to move our money out. And actually, some of these funds had already started applying this fair value pricing adjustment. So in other words, we're adjusting the prices of the funds down ahead of the reference.
Yeah, in May, wasn't it, in June,
in
a number of funds,
So as soon as one fund said, OK, we're going to suspend, you can imagine that all the property investors out there are saying, well, hang on a minute, if this fund is going to suspend, then probably my fund will as well, so I better get my money out now. So, you know, there's nothing that will stop people rushing to get their money out quicker than some people not being able to do it. I mean, I think the long-term prospects for the commercial property sector is actually pretty good. You know, there's generally speaking, if you look at office property, if you look at industrial, the demand and the performance has been pretty good. Retail is a different matter because we've got this ongoing switch from sort of, you know, the high street to online shopping, but the long-term prospects are pretty good. So I think This has been a big reaction, and people remembering what's happened 8 or 9 years ago, and not wanting to get caught again.
Bradley, what do you make of the situation? Is it just panic, or are there fundamental reasons to worry about commercial property?
I mean, as Danny says, before the whole Brexit vote, there was a bit of a sort of softening in the economy, and sort of fund managers and economists that I've spoken to, because a few did say the stage of the economic cycle is quite late, and we're starting to see signs of that. So arguably that's a bit of a problem. And I guess really, I mean, Brexit only really becomes a problem if we actually start to see, you know, job losses, if we start to see companies perhaps relocate headquarters or split headquarters. You could see them sort of therefore needing smaller offices and say want to sell bigger ones. And I guess that could lead to potentially sort of a slight downward trend in pricing. But I guess, I mean, while it's potentially prudent that fund groups have taken the decision to revalue their portfolios of property, there is a bit of a question about how evidential those downgrades in prices are, really. It's only been a couple of weeks since Brexit, and already we're sort of massively devaluing commercial property. So I don't know, I would think there would be an argument, I don't know if Danny would agree, that possibly the fund groups have precipitated this panic themselves. They've brought it upon themselves to a degree. It might be sensible in part, but to a degree, they are potentially at fault for rattling investors' nerves.
Difficult, isn't it? Because, as you said, Bradley, you know, the pricing adjustments were coming in going back a couple of months, and we were seeing some slowing down in the economy and slowing down in the market. And I suppose part of the problem, or certainly what the fund groups are saying, is they're saying it's actually very difficult to value properties at the moment, because with all this uncertainty, the last thing that the commercial property fund managers want to be doing is being forced sellers in a pretty weak market. So I think certainly what they've done is they've acted extremely quickly. Whether they've acted too quickly and precipitated is a bit difficult to know. But certainly what we've seen from investor behaviour is that, you know, once they see the first domino going, they rush to try and move their money out before the other dominoes go. So I think what we've done here now is we're now in a position where precedents have been set that with commercial property, or certainly open-ended commercial property funds, in the future when we get to these kind of moments, is I can imagine that people are just going to be waiting for the first signs of a downturn. And then they'll be rushing to the door quickly. So there is a fundamental question as to whether open-ended funds will survive in their current format going forward.
You've obviously referenced 2008, the last time that commercial property funds sort of gated sort of redemptions. Is the situation exactly the same, and is it as bad? You know, what are the differences between the two?
I mean, it's nowhere near as bad in the sense of, back at that time, there was a banking crisis, there was a liquidity crisis, there was huge amounts of debt across both the banks and across these commercial property developments, and we're in a much better position than we were today. Certainly, that, you know, banks have a much, much greater capital buffers. You know, we do have an economy that's ticking along quite nicely. We haven't had sort of the year of turmoil that we had facing leading up to 2008. So I think we're in a very different position than we are back then.
Now, Bradley, I understand that some experts are actually even saying that commercial property might become attractive to international investors because of the weakness of the pound and ultimately benefit. I mean, is this wildly optimistic, or is it reality?
Yeah, it's hard to say. There are a lot of calls about how brilliant the pound's fall is for the UK economy. Again, we're kind of yet to see a lot of evidence of this. Anecdotally, our property correspondent Jonas Crosland has told me that some estate agents are actually getting a lot of inquiries from overseas investors for residential property, particularly in the £1 to £2 million bracket. We haven't had that sort of anecdotal evidence on commercial property necessarily yet, but I think, I mean, investors have to take a deep breath really and think, okay, often these commercial properties have quite long, their tenants are quite long term. And as Danny pointed out earlier, yes, you could argue the retail situation is looking a bit soft. But if you're in the right retailers who are adapting to the online world, the click and collect world, you know, well, then arguably you shouldn't really be worried, because they're going to be around. They're going to still need their big boxes in various towns and cities across the UK, which box products, distribute products, you know, deal with the online shopping aspect of things. And also, if we do next week see interest rates cut, then from a yield perspective, property continues to look attractive for investors. And while necessarily one shouldn't sort of completely rejig their asset allocation, I think maintaining a portion of your portfolio to property might well continue to make a lot of sense, particularly given where interest rates are likely now to go. I mean, it wasn't that long ago we were thinking they'd rise this year. Now the chances of them being cut this month was something like 86%, one commentator put out yesterday. So yeah, it's potentially interesting to domestic investors, and because of those factors, potentially international ones too as well. Like you say, with the pound falling, but just potentially yet to see the evidence of that, but it makes sense that that would be the case.
We've seen, Legal & General and Aberdeen are both quite bullish about their property funds. You know, Legal & General have taken off the bid offer spread to encourage investment. And, you know, I agree with you, Bradley. I think at some point there is going to be a good time to buy property, but certainly people who've already got exposure in their portfolio should continue to do so. What I think we should see people doing, though, is they should be reassessing whether the open-ended nature of the fund is actually the right way for them to hold property exposure, and whether closed-ended funds are better.
Well, I'll jump to one of my later questions then. I mean, obviously, if you do buy a property investment trust rather than a property fund, if you do want to get out, you can sell it on the secondary market. So in your opinion, are investment trusts the answer for accessing commercial property?
Well, you're getting slightly different exposure, because when you're going into open-ended property, you're getting the returns much more reflect the experience of investing directly in the actual properties themselves. Whereas when you're investing in a closed-ended fund, you're getting much wider market sentiment as well as that exposure to the commercial property sector. I think it's a case of, you know, what sort of liquidity do you want? If you're happy to take a long-term view and you're happy to accept that at various times you may not be able to get access to your money at the price you'd like to get for it, then an open-ended fund can work quite well. So, for example, I think an open-ended fund doesn't work very well in a drawdown drawdown portfolio, or certainly in a pension portfolio leading up to retirement, if you need that level of flexibility and liquidity. But closed-ended funds may not necessarily be appropriate for everyone because of the additional gearing and also because of the fact that it's a wider market sentiment as well. But certainly, I think it's important for people to review where they are with their property exposure and make the right decision on the structure based on what's right for them.
Turning to anybody who is unfortunately stuck in one of these funds, is it all doom and gloom? Are they worthless? Are they still getting income? What's the situation for these people?
Well, the situation is that it's clearly it's a tough time, but you know you're still getting income. I think you probably have little choice but to ride it out. Even if you can get out of your fund, you know you're going to suffer a pretty big fair value adjustment. But if you've been in the fund for, say, 4 or 5 years, you're probably sitting on a pretty healthy profit anyway. So I think it's a case of reviewing whether that exposure is still correct for you and whether, if you can get out, whether you can get out for a price that's acceptable. And if not, then you should sit tight. And you should sit tight until such a time as you have the opportunity to exit at a better price. But actually, fundamentally, if commercial property was the right way to have part of your portfolio, you know, last year, last week, 5 years ago, then it's probably still correct now. It's my question, or my point is that I think investors should be asking the question, you know, when the time is right, is that should they be reviewing whether they're in an open-ended structure or a closed-ended structure?
Okay. Now, we've been talking about funds which invest in physical property. There's actually quite a few funds out there and investment trusts that buy shares of property companies or companies involved with property rather than actual buildings. Are these a better option at the moment?
Well, you're getting exposure to the property market, but in a different way, because you're getting all of the sentiment around equity investing and how profitable a company is at the same time. So you're not really getting the true diversification that you're getting with a physical property fund. You know, for example, if you're investing within a fund that invests in the house builders, you know, you'll have seen a tremendous amount of growth over the last couple of years, but then you'll have seen the values fall 30% since Brexit. So, you know, these funds that invest in shares of property companies, you're not getting the uncorrelated return that a commercial property investment provides you. But it is a different way to be able to get exposure to the property market.
On that note, Bradley, do you think the problems that, you know, these funds have experienced could spread to, let's say, other areas? I don't know, for example, real estate investment trusts?
Well, I mean, if by problem you mean a massive share price fall, mm-hmm. then I think it's already there. A lot of real estate investment trusts have seen their share prices drop an awful lot. So arguably that's all kind of already happened. I mean, in terms of kind of picking up on what Danny said, I suppose, I mean, the beauty of a listed structure to invest in property is that you can get your money back. I mean, yes, the price at which you do that will depend on sentiment in the market, but it's easier. You get that liquidity premium, I suppose, with it. But actually, I mean, I spoke to a fund manager this week who has been, you know, snapping up things like land securities this week amid what is, you know, what looks on the face of it a bit of chaos, because he's just saying, you know, well, the yield is very noteworthy now. These are very stable companies. They, you know, they're sort of solid businesses, have been around for a long time, and really we haven't really had any sort of proper evidence yet about valuation. I mean, obviously valuation is arguably in the eye of the beholder, and if people are panicked, then valuations have gone down already because people are worried, so it makes sense for fund groups to kind of discount the value of their portfolios. But there hasn't really been any sort of proper evidence, and really at the moment a lot of the fear is driving this, and we haven't got a whole lot of evidence. And I think if you're a long-term investor, and as Danny said, if you invested in property 5 years ago, A, you've done pretty well out of that anyway, but B, you know, it hasn't just overnight become, you know, less worthy an asset. And arguably, you know, a good balanced portfolio will see parts suffer in certain times and others, you know, prosper at that same time, and vice versa. So I don't think property as an investment has sort of deteriorated in, you know, quality just because of Brexit. We may well see a downturn in the commercial property market, but I think it'd be sensible for people holding on to investments in this sector to actually wait and see, okay, is unemployment going to start rising? Is consumer sentiment and spending, more importantly than just sentiment, is spending going to drop or is that going to fall? So I think I wouldn't sort of pull the trigger on selling anything just yet. And if you were very brave, I suppose what one could do, if you were, say, invested in the Aberdeen and the LNG funds, which aren't gated, but are charging you effectively a premium to sell. If you were feeling quite brave, you could sell now and buy an investment trust that's actually at a lower discount. So you sort of make a little bit there and then wait for that to go back up. That's quite a risky trade potentially. Yeah. And maybe a more sensible one might be just to, if you have spare capital, maybe put a small bit in a listed property company. And then when you can get out of your open-ended fund, do that in given what's happened, because people have often talked about liquidity in open-ended funds, and you always think, oh well, that won't be an issue. But I mean, as Danny said, in what, 7-8 years, we've been here twice now. Yeah. And I think the future of the open-ended property investment company is clearly going to have to be in question, and I think the FCA has actually made noises about the fact it's going to have a look at this, so that'll be interesting.
Yeah, on that note, Danny, we've obviously seen twice in 8 years property funds stopping investors taking their money out. Is there a risk that any other asset classes might see this? You know, can we expect, I don't know, whether equity, bond or other funds to do this, or is it less likely in those areas?
Far less likely. I think commercial property is the obvious one, where you have these huge assets that have suffered liquidity problems at times, and you have to wait to be able to sell a property, and try and avoid becoming a forced seller. I mean, yes, the FCA are already taking interest in this. The whole issue around fair value pricing and suspensions is something that's regulated very carefully by the FCA. And I think what they'll be doing is they'll be looking at how these funds are distributed, how they're marketed, and importantly, how fairly investors are told about what the risks are and the risks of liquidity and the risk of fair pricing, and whether those have been communicated properly during the sales process. And I think we'll hear back from them in due course.
So different situation of other assets then. Now, another effect of the vote for Brexit has been a plunge in yields on UK government bonds, known as gilts, with one of these bonds falling to a negative rate. Even if you don't invest in gilts, if you're approaching retirement, it could have serious consequences. Danny, why is this such a problem for people coming up to retirement?
The problem is that gilt yields drive annuity rates, and so the annuity is where you exchange your pension fund for a guaranteed income for your lifetime. And those people who still buy annuities, and you know, people still do buy annuities even though they don't have to, they're looking at annuity rates which are as low as they ever have been. So annuity rates have fallen steadily over the years, because as interest rates and gilt yields have also fallen. But now gilt yields have gone much lower, and in some cases, as you say, there's a negative yield out there. Annuity rates are really set to fall further. We've seen a couple of insurance companies already cutting annuity rates. At the same time, we've had with pension freedoms is that far more people are now exercising income drawdown to take their pension benefits. This is where you just draw money out of your pension fund rather than buying an annuity. So the annuity market is much smaller. And so there's really less desire really to offer competitive rates to people coming up to retirement, particularly with a backdrop of low gilt yields. You can only see really annuity rates going one way, which is down.
So you expect more cuts?
I expect more cuts. So I think if people need that secure income, they've got a couple of choices. One choice is that they wait for yields to recover, and who knows when that might happen. That could be you know, a number of years rather than a number of months. The alternative is that they do buy an annuity now, but they shop around to try and get the best rate they possibly can, and this means going around to ideally an annuity broker who can look at a number of different insurance companies and also check that whether you will be entitled to an enhanced rate. So whether for a health or a lifestyle reason, you can often increase your income by, you know, up to 25 or 40% or something. So well worth shopping around if you do decide to buy an annuity. And annuities, they still work well in the sense that they provide people with a guaranteed income for life. So being able to provide that certainty of income over your lifetime is important for certainly an aspect of everybody's retirement income.
If you're shopping around, should you avoid all the providers who've already made a cut, or, you know, I mean, what are your considerations, what are some key points when you're looking around?
Well, the easiest way to shop around is to go to an annuity broker, because you know, going to individual companies can take you a long time and a lot of effort. So go to an annuity broker who has all the contacts. In other cases, they'll be able to help you with all the paperwork and perhaps transact online. A number of annuity brokers have got online rates and online enhanced annuity rates as well, so you can see exactly what incomes are being offered by different providers. So that's, that process of shopping around becomes much easier. So you'll be able to see there which annuity companies are offering the best rates, depending, and you know, different companies offer better rates on different ages at various times. So, you know, if you chose just one particular company, that may or may not be the best rate for you.
Okay, I guess shopping around helps you, you know, perhaps get better than what you might get. But I suppose investors don't necessarily have to have an annuity. They could go into income drawdowns. So with this difficult situation, should people perhaps consider not buying an annuity and look to the income drawdown?
I think income drawdown is certainly an option. And, you know, what we've seen is whereas, you know, 90% of people coming up to retirement used to buy an annuity, that's now gone down to around about half, something in that kind of region. So, and perhaps the most popular way to take your retirement benefits now is to do a mix and match, to do part annuity and part drawdown. So, what people need in retirement generally is they generally need a certain amount of income to meet their basic needs, and that income is ideally guaranteed, and that could be met by state pension or perhaps company pension and perhaps annuity. And then for income above that basic level, that's where income drawdown and the risk and the variability comes in. So I think if you're in a position whereby you can afford to wait, and you might need to wait for quite some time before you buy your annuity, then income drawdown is a solution, because you can adopt a relatively cautious approach with some of your pot, perhaps even just leave it in cash for a short time, and then look to buy an annuity in the future. For those people who are going to use an income drawdown solution for all of their retirement, they need to take investment risk with that, and ideally a good proportion of that into the stock market, to give themselves the best chance of getting a good income which grows over time.
Okay, I suppose on that note, though, the perhaps the downside to income drawdown at the moment is the fact that markets are tanking and they are volatile. Is that a reason maybe not to do income drawdown, because we are in difficult times and uncertain times, and it's, you know, hard to know if you can make it last all your life?
Absolutely right. And this is all about your investment strategy and how much income you're going to take. And certainly if you're somebody who, you know, is not going to be able to sleep at night because the stock market is going up and down, then income drawdown is the wrong thing for you. But if you take the right investment approach and take a long-term view, then you're probably coming from a point where your pension fund has been invested anyway. So all you're doing is you're continuing an investment that may have been going on for 10, 20 or 30 years already. And so this is just an extension of that. So if you're taking a longer-term view, my advice is to make sure that you don't take too much income out. And the best way to do that is to only take out the income that's naturally generated from your investment portfolio. So, for example, if you are generating dividends from an equity income portfolio, that might be generating you sort of 3.5% or 4% or something, live within that income, only draw that income, then actually what happens to the capital in the short term is actually less relevant. You know, the capital can move up and down in the short term, but over the longer term it should grow, and as it grows, your income will grow as well. And actually, if you compare an income drawdown yield and income of around about 3.5% a year, that's not far off what you'd get from an RPI linked annuity. So that's a pretty decent comparable, and you'd expect over time that your income would actually be greater than from an RPI annuity.
Okay, some really helpful suggestions. Thank you, Danny. Now, with all the chaos surrounding the vote for Brexit, as an investor, you might be tempted to turn away from UK markets and allocate to what seem like safer places. And perhaps you're weighing up US equity funds, because like the UK, this is a developed and mature market, but it's far less affected by the Brexit vote. Danny, are US equity funds a safe haven for investors looking to escape the Brexit chaos at the moment?
Absolutely not. In fact, no stock markets are ever a safe haven, in my view. I mean, the thing is with the US is that the US is pretty expensive at the moment. If you look at the average price-earnings ratio, it's running at about 25 times, whereas you compare that to the UK, that's running about 15 times. So just from a sort of a valuation perspective, would you invest in something that's 25 earnings or something 15 earnings? And I think I'd go for something that's at 15 earnings. But also, if you track the U.S. market going back over the last 100 years or so, every time valuations have got around about the 25 times or above, at some point it's been followed by a very sharp fall. So you've got 1901, you've got 1929, got 1966, got 2000, got 2008. And so really from that perspective, you're looking at the U.S. and saying, well, actually the valuations are high. Perhaps if you believe that Google and Amazon are going to take over the world with their business enterprises, then that's a price worth paying. But I think, yes, you should have some exposure to U.S. in a global portfolio, but really the valuations are high. And history has told us that every time the valuations have been at this point, they will come off again. But we just don't know when that might happen.
Okay. You mentioned if you got a global portfolio, you should have some exposure to it. And we mentioned before that it's important to be balanced and diversified. I mean, what would be the positive reasons for having some US equity exposure in the mix?
Well, I think as with any balanced portfolio, you can't second guess exactly where the next layer of growth is going to be. And there are some positive stories from the US. The positive stories about the likes of Google and Amazon and how they're developing their business enterprises. But I think if you're going to take a global approach, then you can't ignore a market of the size of the US. You know, for example, in our special situations fund at the moment, we've got exposure of around about 8%. But it's in relatively defensive equities with a defensive fund. And so what you're looking to do with a balanced portfolio is to have a slice of the pie in every area and that plan over the longer term. That's going to give you a very consistent approach. And particularly with the dollar strength against sterling at the moment, then hopefully you'll see some positive returns from that section of your portfolio.
Some really useful tips. Thanks for that. And you can see our full assessment of the US market and some suggestions on how to access it in this week's issue of Investors Chronicle. That brings us to the end of this week's podcast. So it just remains to thank Danny Cox, Chartered Financial Planner at Hargreaves Lansdown, and Bradley Gerard, News Editor at Investors Chronicle. You can read more on commercial property, annuities, and US equities in this week's issue of Investors Chronicle and the website. Thank you for listening.